Primetime Roundup Podcast, episode 106. It is Walker from George Zone. Walker Macy, glad to be back. Glad to be here on the phone, as always. The man, the myth, the legend, TV fan, expert, enthusiast, and the guy that's already handing out Emmys to Meryl Streep. Why'd they put you in charge of Emmy Awards? That's... Stop it.
They totally should, and yes, I am.
That's all I hear from you. Like, the first day, you're like, oh, give her the Emmy. Give her more Emmys. Then I go on Facebook, and you're like, Emmys. Meryl Streep wins the Emmy. Like, they don't announce this for a long time, man.
Until you heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, Big Little Lies is back, and as if that cast wasn't impressive enough.
Like, right.
Hey, you know, Reese Witherspoon, Nicole Kidman, Shailene Woodley, Zoe Kravitz, that's cool. Let's get Meryl Streep as well.
Right.
We'll get to that. There's a lot to digest from the first episode of the new season of Big Little Lies. Also want to talk about a couple of other things, Fear the Walking Dead, movie I saw, but first, let's roll right into The Handmaid's Tale. New this past week on Hulu, we got 3 episodes, which I wasn't expecting. I really thought we were just going to get 1, didn't you?
Yeah, I feel like last year maybe they did 2. It was weird last year because they had always done, you know, shows like that always do them all at once, but they were like rolling them out every week. I think they did 2 off the bat, or like a 2-hour premiere maybe. But yeah, 3 was random. It should just be 1 from here on out.
I just wasn't expecting it, and all of a sudden I've got 3 hours worth of The Handmaid's Tale to watch, and I'm like, this show is very, very dark if you're not following along with The Handmaid's Tale. I'm like, I don't know if I can do this.
Right. Well, somebody told me that they find the first couple of episodes of The Handmaid's Tale to always be kind of slow, so maybe that's why they did it, just so if you feel like it's not getting going, then you can just keep going.
I got through the first 2 episodes. Did you watch all 3 already?
I did, yeah.
Well, I'll let you give me like a rating on the 3rd episode. And the first 2 I thought were really good. The show's always really good. It's disturbing, but it's incredibly well acted. And I guess the only problem I've had with The Handmaid's Tale is we keep running into this problem where June almost gets away, she almost escapes, and then she kind of puts herself back into the situation at Gilead. That's what happened at the end of last season, and so I was kind of rolling my eyes at the beginning of this first episode, like, okay, here we go again, she's gonna go back to the Waterfords. And it kind of went that way when she goes to try to rescue her child. That obviously doesn't work out well, and then she ends up back with Fred and Serena again. But only for Serena to throw us a big-time curveball and burn down the house. That was probably the best thing I've seen on that show.
I was going to say, you said back to the Waterfords. There is no Waterfords.
I mean, I'm assuming they're going to come back at some point. They may already be back in the 3rd episode that you saw. But
yeah, that was weird. The 2nd episode, they weren't in at all. Yeah, no, they're back. They're both. They're actually the focus.
Okay, good.
Of the 3rd episode. Her with her mother. She's staying with her mother, and he's visiting with the commander that June is now with. So you get them kind of one-on-one.
I love Serena Waterford. I've said that several times last season, and that scene where she just seems like she completely goes to crazy town. Like, everything just goes out of her eyes, and there's that close-up scene of her face, and then you just see the house burning, and June comes in, and she's like, Serena, what are you doing?
Come on.
I mean, it was time, though, right? I mean, she had been through all of this craziness with her husband. She used to be this incredibly intellectual, not that she's still not intellectual now, but, you know, she used to be a writer. She used to be really big in political circles, and now she's not even allowed to read, and she tried to read a book and they cut her finger off. So I mean, she'd had enough.
She's been my favorite character development on the show, because when this show started, she thought they were together. She thought her and Fred were in this together, and she found out quickly last season that they are not. She might as well be a Martha at this point. You know, this world that she helped create, and this is not what she had in mind.
Mm-hmm. So we see, after this happens, we see June go to live with another commander, as you say, and it's, is it Joseph Jeffrey? I can't remember his character's name.
Joseph.
Yeah, she goes to live with him, who is the commander that helped Emily to escape, and we're like, oh, things are about to get, you know, really hopeful for the Handmaids and the Marthas. Didn't really go that way, though, did it? What kind of game is this guy running?
Right, yeah, that was my question for two episodes, and then the third one kind of gets in that a little bit. Yeah. So you have Serena with her mother, and you have the commander, and June is trying to figure out, because we find out in the third episode that not only is he a commander, but he's one of the more respected and one of the key architects of Gilead. What he's introduced is this like good guy that's against this whole thing, when that's not really...
Yeah,
the truth, it's part of it, but yeah, we're getting into that. You'll have to see the third episode. We get into that.
Yeah, because
a lot more.
He seems like he's always willing to at least turn a blind eye to when they're trying to do things, when they're trying to get people out, when they're trying to move people. He seems to not notice, but then when he's kind of forced to notice, he gets really upset about it, and he's like, "Get out of my house!" And you know, June even said to him,
"Well, up to where you are, I think it to me just feels like he is against the whole thing, and he is willing to help, but doesn't want to end up on the wall." But three, we get a little more into what his thinking is and why and how. And
that's fair. Like, yeah, he
may still be a good guy. We're not sure, but there's a lot more going on. We'll talk more next week when we catch up.
I'm cool with what you guys are doing, but I just don't want to get killed over it, okay?
So pretty much. Well, that was my impression on the first two episodes.
Right.
I think we get much deeper in the third.
Yeah.
But once we find out in the third episode that he's not only a high-ranking commander, he doesn't go to meetings, they have to come to him. Like, he's like one of the big honchos.
Yeah.
It's interesting. They haven't given us all of it yet, that's for sure.
We see Emily escape to Canada, and she is being poked and prodded by all the doctors, and they're telling her that her cholesterol is too high. And
I literally laughed out loud. And they're like, "You're high cholesterol." She's like, "Cholesterol? Like, really?"
I looked at my wife and I was like, "This woman was in like a nuclear fallout zone like 6 months ago."
12 minutes ago, exactly. Like, your cholesterol. Well, she even said something later, like, "Yeah, I guess fish is good." Well, they said she was a vegetarian and they'd been feeding them meat the whole time she's been in Gilead,
right?
So I guess that makes sense.
I guess.
Yeah, like, we got bigger problems,
right,
lady.
Than your bad triglycerides.
Right.
She was taking the vision test. They were like, "Okay, can you read the bottom line?" I'm like, I would just punch this woman if I were her.
Right. Well, it's kind of part of what I love about the show. Like, they get so deep. I just don't think shows, I mean, of course nowadays shows do tend to get deeper than they used to, but you know, just you can kind of get a lot from her whole thing. Like, she's getting an eye test for glasses, which seems insignificant. I do that every year,
right?
No big deal, but like, she's been seeing blurry for 4 years because nobody cared if she could see. It's
right.
Like, you can take it on the surface. She's getting an eye test, no big deal, or you can really read a lot if you want to, which I tend to do sometimes.
Yeah. Well, let's see what happens this week. I'll get the next episode, and I'll get caught up with you, and we'll chat again about The Handmaid's Tale. Let's also talk about Big Little Lies. Teased it earlier. Meryl Streep joins the cast this week as... Perry. I was about to say I'll never remember his name, but Perry was the guy that was married to Nicole Kidman and died at the end of the first season of Big Little Lies. So now Meryl Streep shows up as Perry's mom, and she is not very nice. She basically tells Reese Witherspoon that she doesn't like her because she's too short. And then the next...
And too busy, I think, was in there a little bit, maybe.
Yeah. Well, like, she told her that she's a wanter. She's like, some people are just satisfied with what they have, and then there's some people that just go around wanting.
Doesn't sound like a bad thing.
Yeah. So I guess she's going to be sticking around. She's looking for a place to live there in Monterey, and she seems like she's very involved in Nicole and the kids' lives at this point. Also, when she sat down to dinner and she just starts screaming at the dinner table, I was like, there are a lot of layers to this character. No wonder you want to give her an Emmy.
Right. That was pretty much when I started texting anyone who would listen.
Okay, I was going to ask you, what was the scene where you said, all right, this is it, give Meryl Streep the Emmy?
Well, the scene was Reese Witherspoon. I was pretty much already.
Yeah.
Like, she can play a subtle, insignificant character and make it look amazing. Right. And then, you know, a few scenes later, we get a few more layers.
Yeah, and it is, you described her well there. She is like a seemingly mild-mannered lady with glasses, and, you know.
Grandma's in town helping with the kids, no big deal. But you don't need Meryl Streep for that, so you know more's coming right off the bat.
Yeah. Well, it looks like she really wants to investigate what happened to her son. I mean, she's not there for fun and hanging out with the kids and taking them to the amusement park. Like, she is there with the purpose of finding out what happened, I think, right?
She already has made it fairly clear that she's not believing the neat and tidy little story.
Yeah, what did they
tell? Going around town.
What did they tell the police? That he slipped and he fell?
That's what it sounded like. I mean, she said he fell, but then she's talking about him beating on Nicole Kidman, and clearly she shows signs that she's been hurt or in a fight. So, yeah, they're not giving us the whole thing, but...
Yeah, I think
so they're fighting, and she says she stepped in, so I guess they're all kind of fighting. I guess just everything but Zoe Kravitz, like everything but her running in and pushing, like they're all struggling and he fell, I guess is the story they're telling.
Yeah, and I think it was Reese Witherspoon's character that says, like, oh, he slipped. And then everybody else was just kind of like, oh, yeah, that's what happened. Exactly.
Right.
So now they've all kind of turned on her a little bit, too, as, well, you're the one that told the lie, and we had to go along with it, and now you screwed us all. And
well, I had a friend that actually told me he liked it, but he thought it was annoying because this is something that was clearly self-defense, and clearly if they'd just come clean in the very beginning,
it would not
even be a problem, but just the fact that now it's turned into this whole thing just kind of annoyed him, and I get that, but they kind of addressed that, even I think Zoe Kravitz said it in the show, she's like, you know, this would have been nothing if I just turned myself in, but you're not sure, so you cook up a plan, and it seems simple enough, like, we were wrestling and he fell, like...
Right. Yeah.
But, you know, the snowball effect.
Well, I like that they've already branded them. Remember the surfer guy that comes out to talk to Shailene Woodley, and he's like, oh, you're one of the Monterey Five. Like, they've already, like, given them a cool nickname.
Right.
And like, you just imagine that somebody's already filming the documentary on the Monterey Five. And
oh, yeah.
I love that this show didn't really seem to lose anything. It didn't lose any steam. It's shot kind of the same way, and you know, the ridiculous way that these people parent, and the ridiculous interactions like between the two husbands, and those were the things that I loved about the show last year, and they've just continued right along with that. And obviously, you know, it goes without saying that it's well acted. I mean, you got some of the best in the business here, so thank you, HBO.
I should have texted you. I almost texted you, but I can't say on the air here what Reese's ex-husband kept calling her new husband Schneid blank.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, see, that's good. I enjoyed that whole scene. I enjoyed the scene where Reese Witherspoon was trying to convince her daughter to go to college, and daughter's like, I'm going to help homeless people. And she's like, I don't care about homeless people.
I don't care about homeless
people. She's like, I didn't mean it like that.
We wondered, like, what it was going to be like, you know, what they were going to do, how it was going to go, if it was going to turn into, like, this mystery show, you know, and lose what we liked about the first season.
Right.
But it was there, I think, you know, again, like you said, the two husbands, you know, their dynamic, which is terrible, and Zoe, and it's all still there.
Yeah.
And Nicole Kidman is still tormented.
I love it. I actually saw it ranked pretty high on a list of, like, you know, the top HBO shows of all time. Which, by the way, I'll sidetrack for a minute and say that I stopped looking at that list when I saw that Six Feet Under was ranked like number 30 or something. I was like, what?
What?
It was a list of the HBO, like all the HBO shows that they've ever done ranked. You know, and I didn't get to the end to find out what number one is. I assume it's The Sopranos, but yeah, as soon as I saw one of my favorite all-time shows, Six Feet Under, was ranked like number 30, I just turned it off. I turned my phone off and I threw it down on the floor.
This list is stupid.
This list is stupid.
Yeah, I agree. I would definitely. I mean, HBO's had some great shows. I mean, mm-hmm. they probably went all the way back to like First and Ten on that. Yeah. But I mean, definitely put Six Feet Under in the top 10 for sure.
I was wondering if it was going to be top 5, maybe. But
it would be for me. I'd have to say,
yeah. Again,
like you said, that may be one of my all-time favorites. What's the vampire? True Blood?
Yeah, True Blood was even worse. That was ranked like number 50.
What?
Which, you know, I get it. It's okay.
True Blood. That was not for everybody, so right. Maybe it's got to have mass appeal.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to...
But I thought Six Feet Under was brilliant.
I'm going to go ahead and assume that your top three would be Sopranos, The Wire, and Game of Thrones in some order.
I would assume. And The Wire is one I should watch because, you know, I didn't get the buzz. When that was on, nobody was talking about it.
Right. I remember.
Now that it's been gone 10 years, you can't get it. You can't. They don't shut up about it.
I think everybody went back and watched it at some point and was like, oh, wow, this is fantastic.
I may have to do that at some point.
Well, that's what we got right now is another Big Little Lies coming up this weekend. I guess it's my new Game of Thrones because it's on at the same time on Sunday night. So it filled a little bit of that empty void that was left in my soul after Game of Thrones ended. So another show that is back is Fear the Walking Dead. I haven't gotten caught up on Morgan and our group. I don't know what they're up to. I can't actually remember what they were up to last season. It's been a while since this show has been on. I've got two episodes on my DVR, so I want you to tell me, or don't tell me, I want you to convince me why I need to revisit Fear the Walking Dead. Go.
Last year, you know, it was more of a setup. They didn't really know what they were doing. They didn't even know what timeline they were going to be in. Mm-hmm. You know, cast members were leaving, original characters were dying off left and right. They kind of found where they're going, I think. So it's definitely, the first episode's fantastic. It starts... Okay. With a bang, a big plane crash out of nowhere. And why do they have a plane? I guess you got to watch. I don't know.
All right. Well, why would there be a plane?
Why wouldn't there be a plane? Who knows? But they were in the denim factory at the end, and they've kind of gotten away from that, but you know they're going to come back. They were going somewhere to help somebody. So they're in the denim factory, and they're trying to help people. So they were in the plane trying to help people, and they ended up in a... crashing in like a radiation zone where a plant had melted down.
Oh, no.
After the apocalypse. So we got all kind of problems. We're in a radiation zone and there's some sort of bad guys there in hazmat suits. And back home, Max Headroom has taken over the denim factory.
Oh, jeez.
Matt Frewer is the... I thought he was going to be the bad guy. He was on the first episode. He's taken over the denim factory. And... but then they got into the whole deal with the radiation zone, so I guess he'll come back at some point.
This sounds like complete chaos.
It is, and I loved it. It was great. I put the two episodes right up there for that show for me. I think it's kind of found its footing. It's kind of figured out what kind of show it's going to be.
Okay. All right. I'm convinced. You actually did it. You actually made me want to go watch these now. So, okay.
There you go.
Homework for you. I want you to go and watch a rom-com that I saw over the weekend. Always Be My Maybe on Netflix.
Okay. I like her, so I saw that. I want to.
Ali Wong, Randall Park, and Keanu Reeves star in...
Reeves, really? I didn't know that.
In a movie that will just make you smile for a couple hours. I mean, it's... It's just, I mean, you like rom-coms like I do, so it's quirky, it's funny, like not all the not everything in this movie is like sweet and romantic. There's some edgy humor. There's some jokes for guys in there as well. And you know, the guy Randall Park, he's a singer in this band, and they do kind of like a 311 type of thing, you know, where he raps and another guy sings, and some of the songs that they do are just friggin' hilarious. So it's worth it for that. absolutely, Keanu Reeves steals the show. So
that's he play himself.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, he's Keanu Reeves.
Keanu Reeves has become like the new Christopher Walken. He's not even acting anymore. He's just doing caricature versions of himself.
Yeah, and I don't know why. Like, it's so random that all of a sudden everyone loves Keanu Reeves. Is it because of John Wick? Did I miss something? It's like, I feel like just in the last few months, like, everybody loves Keanu Reeves.
Something happened. John Wick was like, yeah, those movies are super popular. I haven't seen them, but I think that the past work just, you know, kind of like, it's just like I said with Christopher Walken. I mean, Christopher Walken was a working actor. He was in movies all the time, and yeah, okay, Christopher Walken, he's a good actor. And then all of a sudden he started kind of making fun of himself. He started kind of showing up as, you know, himself and kind of making fun of himself. And he was in that movie where he played a cat. And all he did was meow once and got a credit. And it was called Keanu. Like, since he started like taking himself much more lightly, I don't know if he ever took himself seriously or if that's just the way we saw it. But he didn't even used to be a fun interview. They used to make fun of him because he was so stone cold.
Right.
But now he's like fun, and I don't know. I think he's just lightened up, and I don't know. I've always liked him.
Yeah.
But I love the turn myself.
Well, it's like in interviews now, he does kind of make fun of himself for being so serious. Like, he's still serious, but now he says things in like a cartoony way where you're like, oh, that's kind of funny. Like, I don't know if it's a put on or not.
I don't either, but that's part of the fun.
Yeah. Bradley Cooper broke up with his girlfriend after 4 years. She said that he was emotionally unavailable while he was filming A Star Is Born. So I'm guessing that our theories about Bradley and Lady Gaga were true. They are having an affair, so there you go. We were right all along.
I don't remember having that theory.
Or maybe we're still.
I didn't ever hear rumors of an affair, but I definitely heard they were closer than his woman was comfortable with.
Did you not see them like making out at the Grammy Awards on stage in front of that poor woman?
I did see that, but that's Lady Gaga, so I didn't think a whole lot of it. She's so dramatic. That's how she always acts with those speeches, and he was just keeping up, I think. I don't know. I didn't think as much of it. She's so dramatic.
Gwyneth Paltrow got remarried, and she decided that she's only going to live with her husband half the week, and the other half the week they're going to live separately. Is this good marriage advice from Gwyneth Paltrow?
Well, this is like her fourth marriage, so, I mean, hey, why not?
I mean, I heard it, and I was like, okay, here's Gwyneth being Gwyneth again. This is silly. But then I'm like, that's not a terrible idea.
I mean, that would probably work for me, actually. Or I should say work for my wife.
Right. Half the week, you just go live in a different house somewhere else.
Yeah, I mean, don't tell my wife about that. I think she'd be all over that. She has looked for me jobs in other countries from time to time. I try not to take it personal.
In other countries? I thought you were going to say in another city or something.
Well, you know, like, it was like, at one point they needed truck drivers in somewhere, like Afghanistan or something. She looked into it. I don't know how serious she was, but
she wants to send you to drive trucks in a war zone. How could you not take that personally?
That's marriage, I guess.
I guess.
Or not, I don't know.
All right, man. Well, plenty more to talk about next week. We'll get back and we'll do that. You got anything fun going on this weekend?
Nope. Still moving.
It's Father's Day. Come on. Your wife's not going to do anything for you for Father's Day?
I think we're going to a picnic at my uncle's house of some sort Sunday. And we got softball, of course, Saturday, the usual.
That doesn't sound like that was your Father's Day idea. We're going to a picnic at my uncle's house.
That's pretty fun.
All right, man. Sounds good. Well, I'll talk to you next time.
All right. Later.